listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
I'm Rob Daly. This is the new European football podcast that looks at all things Bundesliga, Liga, Serie A and La Liga, plus much more. My co-host today is Chris Parrott.
Yeah, we're up and running everywhere now. Tough start for some of the big boys too. Juve lost and Real Madrid drew. I argue Lionel Messi should be taken off penalties. You disagree. Bayern conceded in 9 seconds but won. And it was a great weekend in France as well. Not for Lyon and Alexander Lacazette though. He was booed by his own fans.
We'll be looking at the start of the new Eredivisie season in the Netherlands in depth with expert Michael Jongsma. Plus, we'll be speaking to BT Sport commentator Adam Summerton about how things got underway in the Italian top flight this weekend. We had the second part of our interview with former Ajax youth defender Jamie Lawrence, a Brit now playing his football in Slovakia. All this to come and much more on episode two.
This is Football in Europe.
Chris, we're back.
We are.
How did week one go?
I was very happy. Haven't won a Sony yet, but
it will do surely
one time, surely.
Since the first podcast, there's been some major transfers in that time, so it's probably worth reminding ourselves what deals have gone through.
Yeah, no coach seems to like the transfer window, do they? But it gives us an awful lot to talk about. Andy Brassel told us United should pay the money for Pedro last week. Well, they didn't. Chelsea did, and he's already a match winner with the English side. Nicolas Otamendi at City now. Wonder if he can break into that Mangala company partnership, and it's not finished yet, that's for sure. Balotelli, De Bruyne, Yarmolenko, it's a very, very busy time.
Two of the major leagues did get underway this weekend. La Liga, one of those. But let's start with all things Calcio.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
A big summer of spending in Italian football, notably by the Milan clubs. Major changes at Juve, while Roma, Lazio and Napoli aim to be in the mix. Adam Summerton, BT commentator, joins us. Adam, you did Fiorentina versus Milan on BT Sport Europe last night. Biggest game of the weekend. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, what a great start for Paolo Sousa, who'd had a difficult week, actually. He said it had been his most difficult week since he took the job, with some off-field distractions with Joaquin possibly going to Betis, and they didn't quite know whether Mario Suarez was eligible for the game as well, but they got over all of that. I think it was a night where nothing went in Milan's favour, but, you know, there were real problems at the bat for them again. It was just almost like a repeat, really, of last season in some ways, even with Zanisha Mihailovic coming in. But for Milan, I guess in a way it was a little bit of a reality check after all the positivity we've heard during the summer. 85 million euros spent. There's still problems there.
Can we speak about Mario Balotelli? I know we seem to speak about him every summer, don't we? Is he going back to AC Milan, and do they actually need him?
Well, in answer to the second question, no, I don't believe they do need him. I think it will probably almost certainly be a mistake. I'd love to be proved wrong, because I'd love to see his talent come to fruition. But I just don't think that it's right for Milan. It's not the area of the team. If they're going to lay out, you know, still, even if Liverpool paid half his wages, that would still be, you know, a big part of their wage budget gone. I think in Luis Adriano and Bakker, they've got two great centre forwards there who will score a lot of goals with the right service. So I just think it would complicate things. And what they really need, the guys on the European football show last night were saying it a lot, was that they need someone deep lying midfield who can dictate the pace of the game. You know, someone like Pirlo. I know they don't grow on trees, but they need somebody like that. It looks as though it possibly is going to happen, though. Adriano Galliani has confirmed that they are in talks with Liverpool, and I can't really see a happy ending.
Now, a 2-0 win for Fiorentina then. We'll get to some of the other stories in a moment, but Juve lost at home on the opening weekend of the season for only the second time in 32 years, beaten by Udinese. We know about the players that are left and there were injuries, but what happened for the defending champions, who surely have their biggest title test in a few years?
Well, I think what was really interesting for me was Bonucci said before the game that he felt that this was a transitional year. Now, to use a word like that was quite significant for me, particularly after what they achieved in that first season under Allegri, which was a sensational achievement. I really can't say praise him enough for what he did there last season, because he made them better remarkably after all the work Conte had done. He made them more flexible as well, which I think was a key thing. But this undoubtedly is a huge challenge that lies ahead. And I said before the game, so I'm not saying something that I kind of hadn't already said, is that I think they're hugely going to miss Carlos Tevez. He was so important to everything that they did last season. His energy in the final third will be so difficult to replicate, and arguably the players that they have are going to find that a real task. I was surprised that Dybala didn't start the game yesterday, although Koeman is certainly a good player. He struggles to finish. That's really an area of his game that he's got to work on. You're right to highlight the midfield as well. Marquisio being out with injury, a big miss. Vidal, clearly another player, and Pirlo. And look at the experience that they've lost there in those three players. And, you know, that for me is where the big challenge for Juventus. They developed that incredible winning mentality with that squad that have been together, winning so many titles, building a dynasty. When you take three players out of that, I think you can underestimate, even with the quality of the players that they've brought in, how difficult it can be to just motor on as they've done before. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they go this season, Juve.
And talking about big tests, Adam, they play Roma on Sunday. How big's that game, even though it comes so early in the season?
Well, I think it's one of those fixtures where you wish it had come just a few weeks later, don't you? It's a shame in a way to have a fixture quite that big so early on, but it's going to be absolutely brilliant to watch. There is absolutely no love lost there. And undoubtedly, Roma for me, I still make Juve favourites, by the way. I think it will just be a lot closer this season. And Roma for me are their biggest threat. And it's not ideal, is it, for Juventus to have that fixture coming up straight off the back of an opening weekend defeat.
I saw a bit of Roma at the weekend. I think the front three of Dzeko, Jovino and Salah will take a bit of time to gel. But let's talk about another Manchester City loanee signing, Stefan Jovetic, 91st minute winner against Atalanta, off the bench. A big season for him. He's barely played in England. I'm sure you saw lots of him when he was impressive in Serie A previously.
He was very impressive, and I have to say that I've been surprised that he hasn't been quite so impressive in the Premier League, although I guess he would quite rightly point to the fact that there's undoubtedly been a lack of opportunities. Look, you know, this is a guy that scored 14 league goals for Fiorentina in the, I'm trying to remember, the 2011-12 season. I think it was 13 the season after, so there's no doubting his quality. And he took his goal absolutely brilliantly, didn't he? And celebrated wildly. I mean, to get off to a good start after all that's happened at City for him, or all that hasn't happened at City, was so important.
Yeah, indeed. If the two Milan teams have money, though, we've got to talk about Carpi. They were in the fifth tier as recently as 2009, I think. Not a great start, was it? They were 5-0 down to Samp before half-time. Can they seriously compete at this level? It's a great story. And, of course, they host Inter next. That's going to be some occasion.
We've seen so many of these stories around Europe just recently, haven't we, of clubs who've really come from nowhere to get into the top flight. And you're right. I mean, it was just a terrible start for Carpi, wasn't it? The last thing that they needed. You hope that isn't a sign of things to come. Difficult next game as well, as you highlight, against Inter too. But from Sampdoria's perspective, I mean, they were one of my favourite sides to watch in Serie A. I just hope that despite the players that they've lost, that they can really pick up where they left off last season and achieve some great things this time around.
And Adam, I'm going to ask you the question. Is there any chance that you're a biased football commentator? And I ask you that because when we first called you up on a video conference, you were wearing a Genoa shirt. It's a cool shirt, mate, but what's the deal?
I suppose maybe go down the route of a bit of a football hipster and collecting these Serie A shirts. Certainly no biased at all. For anybody listening, no, I've collected them, really. I've got a Napoli shirt, I've got Juventus shirt. Who else have I got? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. It's Genoa. I've got plenty of others as well. I've got an Ajax shirt that I wear from time to time as well. So no bias at all. But Genoa were one of the sides who I did quite a lot of last season. So I thought I've got to add that one to my collection.
Well, if you ever have any hand-me-downs, me and Chris will take them in a split second. Adam, thanks for coming on Football in Europe.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Next to the Spanish top flight, which got underway this weekend, Pedro's departure from Barca days after the Spanish Super Cup was a major story, and Barcelona got their campaign underway at the team they lost to, Athletic Bilbao, who they won 1-0, but it was an interesting game for a number of reasons, Chris.
Yeah, it was. Luis Suarez scoring, good start for him, and I think the fact they've been thumped at San Mamés so much, I mean, it's a very good start for Luis Enrique's side, but Lionel Messi missed another penalty. Take him off penalties, Barca.
So what, you're going to tell him?
Yeah.
The best player, perhaps, of all time, you're not taking penalties anymore?
I'm going to say, Lionel, you're almost perfect, but the one thing you not great at is
how
penalties.
Is he not good at them?
14 misses. 14. At some stage, it will come back to haunt them. They're good enough at
the
moment.
Well, it did against Chelsea in the Champions League.
Yeah, and remember, he missed that one in the last minute against City last season. Okay, ultimately, they went
oh,
through.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
but
that.
But that was a big moment. I just think, I can guarantee you there must be someone else in that Barca team who's better at penalties.
Well, Luis Suarez surely can take them, can't he? But yeah. So what you tell Messi, is it worth that friction?
Do you know what? I would hope that somewhere Lionel Messi is thinking. I mean, he's listening to this podcast, but I would hope that he himself knows that maybe he should be off penalties himself.
I think this is a huge 4 or 5 months for the future of La Masia. There was a headline in the week from Marca which says the downfall of La Masia, pointing to the fact that they've seen the likes of Valdez, Xavi, Pedro and Thiago all leave for sums of money, and whether it becomes a money-making system that you produce these players. But considering they can't sign anyone or register their signed players, anyway, Nardo Turan and Alex Vidal till January, I just think it's absolutely the time when the club's academy has to show that it's got players good enough for the first team.
Yeah, and I think you already saw it last season when maybe in the past, after falling behind is the wrong word, but they dipped off from those heights of Pep Guardiola's team. And they signed last summer, they signed Suarez, they signed Rakitic, they signed Vermaelen, Matthew.
But that was a change in policy. That was let's go big and buy a number of players, not just one star name even.
Exactly, and it worked. They won the treble. So
are they going against their ethos now? I mean, it's a philosophy that they're very proud of, a club ethos that they're proud of.
I think they always did pay a little bit, whether it be in wages anyway. I know they didn't quite spend these Galactico stars like Madrid have always traditionally bought, but certainly it was a shift last summer, and it was a shift that worked. So maybe you look at it, as you said, it's a big period for those players. Can they come into the team, or do Barcelona look and say, hang on, we need to be a bit more like other clubs here and sign the best, which you might argue they've done again, Arda Turan, Vidal. They have already spent big, those players coming in January.
And La Masia Academy players and they have to really step up because, of course, Neymar's off to Manchester United before the end of the transfer window, as we all know.
Benzema to Arsenal, Muller to United. Yeah. It's going to be a busy few weeks, yeah.
I mean, anyone who thinks Benzema's leaving, they must be out of their mind. He was injured at the weekend for Real Madrid's 0-0 draw with Sporting Gijón. A very disappointing result. Great one for Sporting Gijón. But Bale played the 10. They were trying to work out a situation with that. What do you think is going to happen with that? We talked about it last week, but are they going to stick with it for the season?
Certainly for the start of the season, they will. Interesting chat. Gaisca Mendieta was saying on Revista with Guillaume Balague on Sunday night about how this isn't just a footballing decision. It is away from football decision, if you like. It's one which has probably been taken above Rafa Benitez's head, and he has to try and work Gareth Bale into that situation.
So he's willing to, because he's a stubborn guy, Benitez, is he willing to appease the president?
He has to at Real Madrid.
Does he? He does.
Yeah. I just think otherwise you don't last, and he knows that. He was there as a player and early on in his coaching career. He gets Real Madrid. I think he would have known that when he took the role on, having left Napoli. And It's huge pressure for Gareth Bale, first of all, because he has to be that 10 at arguably, you know, well, one of the biggest clubs in the world. Whether his performances so far have merited on the pitch, certainly Mendieta said that they hadn't on Revista, but said that this was a decision which was taken for not just footballing reasons, but to build a club around an icon like Gareth Bale. Fascinating to see how it goes. They didn't win. They were a bit unlucky. Ronaldo should have had a penalty in the first half.
They had loads of chances.
One of those nights when I think you have to say, because you look at it on paper and you think, whoa, Rafa hasn't won his first game away at Sporting Gijón. But actually, they probably did enough to win the game, but they didn't.
I like the way you say Gijón, by the way. And it's good we don't have to talk about David De Gea. I'm so bored of it. Atletico, they got a 1-0 win against Las Palmas, who had Valeron, 40-year-old Valeron on the bench for them. He didn't play. With all the new forwards they've got, they went with Griezmann and Jackson. Jackson came off for Fernando Torres. It ruined your accumulator, Chris. But aside from that, what kind of insight can you give us into that game?
It's difficult because it did ruin the accumulator. We had them at -1 and they scored 16 minutes in. You thought, well, this is... And it was the last one. The other two had come in.
Right.
You said, well, of course, Martinez, Griezmann on the pitch. And then they hit the... They hit the woodwork in the last minute as well.
I'm glad that didn't come
out. But they won the game. And you know, we talked about Karim Benzema and the fact that Real Madrid had Hesse up front with Bale behind him. And you look at that Atletico side. You know, strength and depth. Vieto was on the bench, didn't even get on. Martinez.
I like him a lot, that Vieto.
Griezmann, Torres coming off the bench. They look on paper like Atletico have a really strong side. And if Barca or Real Madrid aren't near their best, well, we saw a couple of seasons ago, it didn't matter. They were at their best and Atletico won the title. I think Diego Simeone will be very happy with his summer recruitment and he'll be happy with a 1-0 win.
So do you think it's a bit closer than it's been made out? Because, I mean, people are saying there's a sizeable gap between Atletico and the top two.
I think there's a sizeable gap between them and Barcelona. I'm not sure how much of a gap there is between Atletico and Real Madrid at the moment. But we have to talk about Barcelona. They won the treble last season.
One game in.
They're going to strengthen. They definitely strengthening in January with Arda Turan and Alex Vidal. If you finish above Barcelona, you'll win the title. And if you finish above Barcelona in the Champions League, I think you'll probably win the Champions League.
Other notable scores from the weekend. Valencia with Phil Neville as assistant coach there now. They drew 0-0 at Rayo Vallecano. David Moyes, Real Sociedad drew 0-0 at Deportivo. In total, 8 goals in the first 9 games. I mean, a really slow start to the Spanish season.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Next up, it's time to talk about all things French football. And we'll start, Chris, with Marseille. They lost to Marcelo Bielsa as manager after the first game of the season. One of the talking points in European football. They replaced him with former Olympiacos boss Michel. And that didn't work out too badly.
Not at all. 6-0 against Troyes as an opening day result for a coach. I mean, it might all be downhill from now on, to be honest with Michel. But brilliant performance for them. It was nice to see the fans firmly behind it. They had a big Bienvenue Michel in the stand, which is important for him, I think. Marcelo Bielsa was such a big character at the Stade Velodrome, but he's gone in there. He's clearly got his message across too. Brilliant goal. Lucas Ocampos with a bicycle kick. Lassana Diarra with an outstanding long-range strike. And I think that's very important after a difficult start, a very difficult start on and off the pitch. They're up and running. And certainly I saw quite a few of Michel's games at Olympiacos in the Champions League when they beat Manchester United. They beat Juventus last season at home. They're a really entertaining team to watch, and I think it could be a good mix that Marseille have got. It was going to be a huge appointment, particularly given when it came in the season and very early stages, I know, but it looks like they might just have got it right.
Things don't seem all right to me at Lyon at the moment. The Mathieu Valbuena signing looked like such a good deal, but they lost 2-1 to Rennes at the weekend, and this ongoing problem continues with Alexander Lacazette. He didn't score. He scored loads last season, linked with loads of major clubs, and he got booed when he was taken off.
Yeah, he did, on the hour mark. And I don't think the situation is especially good for Lyon. They had maybe an unexpectedly good season last campaign. A lot of their young academy prospects came to the fore, outstanding. Lacazette was the main man, if you like.
Fekir, outstanding last
exactly.
season.
Exactly, and Lyon need Lacazette. And Lyon supporters need Lacazette. He signed that new deal after, as you said, he was courted by almost all of the major teams in the Premier League, in La Liga. But he is a Lyon player and they need to get that situation right quickly.
Well, he signed a new contract. Do you think he'll stay for the season? I mean, that's what everyone's expecting ahead of Euro 2016.
Yeah.
He'll still be a Lyon player.
Yeah, I think he will. And it protects them in the future next summer. Again, and we mentioned it at the top of the show, I know about this transfer window. Coaches wanting it to close now before the season starts. And I think this is a prime example because he has been talked about so much and it can't not affect his performance. But as soon as that transfer window shuts, and he's definitely a Lyon player until January or the summer, I think he'll knuckle down is the wrong word. It's not a lack of effort, but suddenly all of that talk goes away. And hopefully from Lyon's point of view, he can get back to scoring goals.
It's been a really interesting booing-related story in France over the weekend because Benjamin Stambouli was booed by PSG's own fans on his debut the weekend previous because he's born in Marseille. Laurent Blanc said, well, if people from the south aren't allowed to be associated with this club, then you best kick me out the door, basically.
Yeah.
Then, ironically, they went to Montpellier on Friday, Stambouli's old club before Tottenham, and he got a wonderful reception from the home fans when he came on there rather than the PSG supporters. I mean, it just seems such a stupid situation for him to be booed by his own team when he's their Kabay replacement, effectively.
I think it's supporters, isn't it? And you wonder if part of the Montpellier reaction, the good reaction, was because they'd
to wind them up a little bit and
say, well, we'll have him if you don't.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I always think if players start performing, people forget. where they've come from. How many times have we seen players look like they're out the door?
Well, Manuel Neuer, remember that when he moved from Schalke
and had to go and meet with the supporters.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
I think most Bayern fans probably like him now.
Yeah, but I'm sure they do.
But behind Paris Saint-Germain, 9 points from three games as well. But it's a bonkers league, Ligue 1. Bastia, Angers, newly promoted, and Nantes, all on 7 points. So if you predicted that top four after three games, you'd be a very rich man with the bookies, I reckon. But terrific for Nantes. Watched the BT European Football Show, and Julien Laurens tipped them for as a surprise package. Certainly seemed to be thus far. Interesting for them. And they go to Bordeaux this weekend. And just wonder if they might, that might be a good time to play Bordeaux. European football ever expanding borders. They're at Khairat Almaty, which I checked this. It's further east than Lahore and and Mumbai. That is a European away day.
Worth noting, a goal of the weekend in France, Hatem Ben Arfa. This unbelievable solo goal for Nice in a 2-1 win over Caen. He picked it up probably about 30 yards from goal, dribbled past the whole team. He looks like he has lost that bit of timber, as Andy Brassel called it last week. I mean, when he's really playing, Chris, and back in France, we might just start to see the proper number 10 that he is that we didn't see in England.
Well, I hope so, because he's a terrifically talented player and Nice have taken a big gamble.
Because of his attitude. I mean, this is a major problem.
Yeah, and also he couldn't play due to that, you know, because he'd played for so many clubs. But Nice stuck with him. And maybe if you just say to him, look, you're the main man, go for it. And Nice can afford to do that, whereas other clubs can't, I think. It'd be great to see him. He's still perfectly young enough. And another thing Andy Brassel said last week on the show was that it is, Ligue 1 is the place for number 10s, if you like. And I hope that Hatem Ben Arfa could continue scoring more goals like that, because it was a fabulous effort.
We have our Bundesliga review to come, along with a special look at the Eredivisie 2. But first, the second part of our interview with former Ajax youth defender Jamie Laurens. The 23-year-old British player is now at Trenčín. They were the double winners in Slovakia last season. Here he tells us about his friendship with Christian Eriksen, the fear that British players have to move abroad, plus the star names that he saw day to day at Ajax. But I started by asking him why things didn't quite work out there.
This is Football in Europe special interview.
My time at Ajax was a bit plagued by injury. I had two operations in 2 years. I think myself it was because of the level of training. When I was training at an amateur club in England, training once a week, going to Holland, training 3 times a week, and then moving to Ajax and then training 5-6 times a week. Yeah, there were some good left backs, but there was definitely an opportunity for me there.
Who were the first team players there in that position at the time?
Well, we had Urban Manuelsson, who was playing there.
Yeah, okay.
Nikolai Boylison, then at that point in the academy, and Daley Blint.
That's some proper competition.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, no, it is, of course, yeah. You kind of get to know them, and then it doesn't seem so much like that. If you look at what they've all achieved now in their careers, then absolutely, for sure. But, you know, at the time, they were also just up-and-coming players, and I know Nikolai personally, and he's also struggled with injuries as well.
You knew Christian Eriksen, I presume you still know Christian Eriksen pretty well. Like, how good a player is he?
Fantastic. I mean, when I was also playing there, he'd just come in from Denmark, so he was kind of new. He knows how to create space, his touch and his vision. He was an amazing player to play with. He was living with a family when he first moved over, and he was kind of looking for a place. Where I was living at the moment, it was really nice. And I said, well, you can come look for an apartment near mine. He eventually got the apartment across the street from us. And I kept getting messages from him. Oh, I see you in your living room. What are you doing? Like, oh, God. He was obviously a terrible cook. So he used to come and have dinner at our house until he kind of learned himself. It was a great feeling having other foreign players there that you can communicate with.
Why do you think that a lot of Brits don't go abroad, play their football?
British players are so used to playing in Britain, I think they're not quite sure what to expect. And I think there's an element of fear there. Everyone's so used to coming up through an academy at the age of, you know, 19, 20, then loaned to another club, maybe lower down in the Championship or League One. No one really considers, why don't I try something abroad? I just don't think it's in the vision of young players at the moment. They kind of think, you know, England's where the money is at. I'll stay here instead of kind of, you know, what might be best for my football education.
Because I knew part of your route. I didn't know the whole thing. But to be playing for that amateur club in between QPR and then Haarlem, it just shows anything can happen, really, in that route to a professional playing career.
It was unexpected for me as well. I mean, I always knew I was a good player and I always enjoyed playing football, and that's what's really driven me, is that I want to play, and you know, I was going to make that happen no matter what. And you have to have good support. I mean, everyone's got behind me in this, and you know, when you have setbacks, when you get released from academies, everyone rallies behind you and says, you know, move on to something better. And now I'm playing at a very high level, playing Champions League football and winning cups.
So Jamie, you're going back to Amsterdam for some more rehabilitation because you're injured at the moment. Before I let you go, because I think you do literally have to leave pretty soon, what's football like in Slovakia?
It's a very physical game, high tempo stuff. We train how we play, that's our philosophy. We train at absolutely 100%, real intensity. You have to be very, very fit. But we also love to play football because of that, the Dutch ownership and the Dutch philosophy coming through. And we're one of the only teams in the league that does that. And, you know, we pick apart teams that don't do it because it's kind of total football.
And you played most of the games last season.
I signed quite late on in the year. Since then, I got 25 games in. Coming into a new team, and obviously you're not going to start in the beginning. You know, got to prove yourself and all of that. And felt that I did prove myself, and the team, coach, players were very happy with me.
And what do you hope for the future now? Where do you want to be 2 years' time, even 3 years' time? Where do you want to be playing your football?
It depends where the interest is, I guess. Obviously, you always kind of have the ultimate choice of whether you want to go or not. But right now, I'm playing at a Champions League level. Quite like to stay at that level, you know, with a team that does challenge for something. That is my aim going forward from here, possibly somewhere slightly closer to home than Slovakia. You know, England, France, Spain. Want to play at the highest level and challenge myself.
This is Football in Europe special interview.
Well, the best of luck to Jamie. We really appreciate him coming on the first couple of shows, and happy birthday for the other week. He turned 23 as well. Next week, we have a special interview with Ireland defender Darren O'Dea on what happened when he ended up in Donetsk playing for Metalurg Donetsk in the Ukrainian top flight, just as the ongoing conflict started.
So we just went to run over to it, and as we did, there was guys in balaclavas pointing machine guns, screaming, top of their voice at us as if we were, I don't know what they expected. As you can imagine, we all froze.
Now that's just a teaser. Chris, surely you want to hear the rest of that?
Absolutely. Extraordinary story, and it continues. He's now playing in India under Nicholas Anelka is his head coach, and he's going to come up against teams coached by Zico and Roberto Carlos.
Okay, so we'll have our interview with Darren O'Dea on the show next week.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Let's get the latest from the Bundesliga. I was over in Germany at the weekend commentating on Schalke against a newly promoted Darmstadt who'd enjoyed back-to-back promotions. They could have got something, actually, in Gelsenkirchen. They took the lead 10 minutes in. Konstantin Rausch had a wonderful goal. And they played compact but long ball, and it really worked against Schalke, who were under new head coach Andre Breitenreiter, who took over from Roberto Di Matteo. That was an awful spell from Roberto Di Matteo, and they played ugly football. Julian Draxler bailed them out with a lovely goal after half-time. But there's continued talk, Chris, about him leaving. Horst Held, the sporting director at Schalke, you know, he's linked with Arsenal and Juve. He says something could happen, but we won't let it happen on transfer deadline day. Presumably because that leaves you in a situation where you can't replace one of your most creative players.
Exactly. He's still only 21, Julian Draxler.
21.
I mean, we looked that up earlier because he seems to have been around forever. He is Schalke's main man. If you lose him, and I think it's a little bit like the De Bruyne situation at Wolfsburg. If they lose him, they sort of need to do it sooner rather than later, because otherwise it really impacts your, well, certainly the first half of the season.
Yeah, they do have Max Meyer as well, who came off the bench. Maybe he could be the guy that they think will give him more regular game time. Let's talk about De Bruyne, Chris, because on the flight back from Germany, I was on the plane with Archie Rintert, who's off BT, and he was at the game, which finished Cologne 1, Wolfsburg 1, Nicholas Benter with a late equaliser there, but De Bruyne well off the mark. And every time he was tackled, there was a big cheer from the home support. I mean, it just doesn't seem right with him there at the moment.
It wasn't a great performance. He missed an excellent chance, a one-on-one, which normally would have, you know, you would have liked to think he would have finished. I honestly think in any line of work, we talk about footballers as if they are these somehow different to normal people. I genuinely don't think they are. And I think if you have a whole summer of thinking, well, where am I going to be living? Which country am I going to be living in? I just think...
I suppose that's a good point. Because I'm not big into the... There's rumours you can't perform to your best or you can't play full stop. But you think that whole relocation thing is a factor?
I just think it has to impact at some stage.
Well, what they're talking about is, Wolfsburg, there is an offer, but City will double even that.
Well, there we go. I just think, we talked about Lacazette earlier, I think, yeah, we've seen, there's so much talk about footballers moving, wanting to move, etc., not really caring who they play for. Maybe that is partly the case, but I'm sure all of the speculation at some stage does have to slightly impact you. And also, everybody looks for those errors. Everybody looks, you know, we probably wouldn't be talking about De Bruyne's poor performance if he hadn't have been linked with a move to Manchester City. I think it comes back to the whole thing. After these transfer windows shut, everybody can settle down at least for 3-4 months. Then you see if it has really impacted him.
Elsewhere in the Bundesliga this weekend, Mönchengladbach lost again. They lost at home to Mainz by 2-1. Another big result for Dortmund. They won 4-0 at Ingolstadt. They rested Marco Reus for that bizarre Europa League game of the week because they didn't want him to get injured on that artificial turf in Norway against Odd Greenlands. But it looks like it's a move that paid off because they're absolutely flying under Thomas Tuchel.
Scoring for fun. 8-4 against. Decent start, let's be honest. And those 4 goals in midweek. Great to see. I always thought when Dortmund became almost everybody's second club for a couple of seasons in the Champions League. And they played with a carefree attitude. And so far, it's absolutely continued. And it would be great to have a proper Bundesliga title race.
What's also interesting about that, I was speaking to someone who works at Dortmund at the weekend, and he said, maybe this change is so positive because Klopp would come out 20 minutes into training, hands in pockets. You can also almost imagine him, all relaxed looking. Thomas Tuchel's out there 20 minutes before training, putting out the cones himself. And I wonder if it's just that little injection that that everyone needed there. A notable result as well, the fastest ever Bundesliga goal at the weekend. Hoffenheim 1, Bayern 2. A stray ball from David Alaba, allowing Kevin Volland to score 9.03 seconds in. And I know this off by heart, Chris, but Bellarabi's fastest previous goal was 9.06 seconds. So Volland with the fastest ever goal. But Müller equalised, Lewandowski with the 90th minute winner. There's just no beating Bayern, is there?
Well, even after they concede after 9 seconds as well.
Hakan Çalhanoğlu with a wonderful free kick for Leverkusen as they won 1-0 at Hanover. A very exciting start to the Bundesliga season with Dortmund, Bayern and Leverkusen all on maximum points from 2 games.
Yeah, and this weekend, Rob, Bayern against Leverkusen in Munich. Already looks on paper anyway, pretty entertaining game.
Yeah, pretty good game to talk about next week on Football in Europe.
Follow us on Twitter at FAE Show for the latest from Football in Europe.
Now it's time for an in-depth look at the new Eredivisie season. 3 games in, let's speak to a man born in Groningen, working in Amsterdam and speaking to us from Utrecht, Michael Jongsma, part of the Opta Johan team and Benefoot website. Michael, thanks for coming on.
Hey Rob, how are you doing?
All good, thank you. Let's start with the champions PSV Eindhoven. 1-1 at Heerenveen at the weekend. They've sold star players Memphis Depay and Jorginho Wijnaldum, who we saw against each other in the Premier League. How have PSV gone about replacing them?
Replacing is almost impossible with the two, I think. When you look at what impact the two have made at their club even, I know Memphis hasn't been as consistent as many people would like, but they've both been doing really well and showing that the step up for players of that caliber isn't even that big. For PSV, it's a complete different situation, of course. They've brought in Davy Prupper from Vitesse, who was one of their star men last season. A bit of a slower midfielder, someone who loves to have the ball, which is kind of the opposite of Wijnaldum, whose movement is really good. And they've brought in Maxime Lestien, a former Club Brugge man. He was at Genoa last season. And yeah, he is the main contender for the left forward position. It will be interesting to see if their squad depth will help them through the season.
Let's talk about that Maxime Lestien signing. I saw him in Belgium last year, just as he left Club Brugge for Qatari side Al Arabi, who immediately loaned him to Genoa and now PSV. So what's the deal with that?
Al Arabi have bought him from Club Brugge for 10 million euros. And for Club Brugge, that was a really good deal. And Lestien, of course, was ensured of a good paycheck as well. I don't think there's ever been the intention of actually letting him play there. It's mainly been an investment by that club or by that consortium behind the club to see if they could get him to play for other teams, make some money off of that, and then if his market value increases, sell him off to a bigger club. His season last year at Genoa wasn't impressive at all. They have now loaned him to PSV, and I think there's a buy clause for PSV in there to make the deal permanent of around the same amount that they have paid for Club Brugge. So for Lestien himself, it's probably a great chance to prove himself at top level.
It's all going well at Ajax and Feyenoord, Michael. Ajax first, 9 points out of 9. Frank de Boer was a wanted man 12 months ago, linked with Tottenham, etc. Can they reclaim the title? How good a coach is he?
They haven't looked really good so far this season. They've been knocked out by Rapid Wien in Champions League qualifiers. But yeah, 9 points from 3 games, nil conceded. I mean, the defense is looking quite solid. It's a really young team. It's really talented as well. They have brought in Nemanja Gudelj from AZ. They've brought in Deli Sinkhaven even last winter from Heerenveen. But they already had probably one of the best midfields in the league. So the strength and depth at Ajax is incredible, really. Yeah, and for Frank de Boer, I mean, he's a bit of a strange manager. He's really good at organizing a good defense, as you would expect from a former Dutch national team captain who was one of the best centre-backs of his time, probably. I mean, he's a bit of a control freak, and in that sense, you can see that he's worked with a manager like Van Gaal. And I do think he kind of struggles to just trust his forward players to do the right thing when they're on the ball. But when you look at the front line, I mean, Amr El Ghazi, he's got the pace, he's got the technique, he's got a good cross in him. He's quite powerful as well. He's I think he's 6 foot or so. He's quite big for a winger. He is just so dedicated to his game. His idol is Cristiano Ronaldo, as it is with many of the young talented wingers at the moment, Memphis Depay being another. He will have to work on his consistency, but yeah, I think he's probably going to develop in the main man at Ajax very, very rapidly.
And of course, Dirk Kuyt is back in the Netherlands. There was that excellent video on his Twitter page of him telling his kids he was going back to Feyenoord. They beat Vitesse 2-0 at the weekend. Kuyt scored a penalty. That's 3 goals in 3. Do you think he was signed for his experience, quality, or both?
I'm not even sure if it's actually about experience or quality. It's for Feyenoord fans, it's actually just almost an iconic player coming back and having that in your side. And of course, experience counts. The feeling the team gets, the feeling the crowd gets when they see Dirk Kuyt working for them on the pitch. And he is a typical world-class workhorse, I'd almost say. Because he's played as a right winger. He hasn't created that many chances. He's only had 3 shots in the league so far, and all 3 were penalties. Everybody's warming to him. He's a natural leader. He's only been at Feyenoord before for 3 years. It's not like he's been there for 12 or 15. But for some reason, the connection between him and the crowd is just incredible. And they haven't really impressed so far in terms of play, although I do think against Vitesse they were significantly better than in the previous 2 games. They are gaining momentum at the moment, and they have a big game coming up against PSV. And at the moment, you would make them favourites probably a bit much, but you could see them edge it, and that's just such a turnaround when you look at in what state they were before the summer break.
You talked about Vitesse then. Of course, they have that link with Chelsea, don't they? A lot of Chelsea youngsters go to Vitesse to get that first-team experience. I noticed Dom Solanke made his debut. Izzy Brown and Lewis Baker have played in most of their games this season. What have you made of them so far?
Lewis Baker looks a really tidy player, and he played against Marko Vinovic on Sunday, the man he has to succeed in the Vitesse side. And I think he came out quite well. In general, Vitesse is a very fascinating side. The Chelsea youngsters you have there are great to watch. I mean, Izzy Brown, for me, is one that really still needs to find his feet. But he was highly rated in their youth system, so you kind of expect him to pick it up soon. Solanke, can't say too much about it. Pantic looked good in patches when he came on for Vitesse so far this season. But especially Nathan, the Brazilian youngster, really looks a special player for the Dutch league and for Vitesse. Is that some of these youngsters are of a caliber that you wouldn't attract were it not for such a loan construction as there is in place right now. And I am actually expecting them to make a run for the top 3 this season again as well.
And I saw that story at the start of the season where police in the Netherlands were going to go on strike during Eredivisie games. So they were getting postponed at the start of the season. Now, what happened in the end there?
Kind of rare for something like this to happen. But I mean, the police haven't had a raise for several years, I think. They decided, well, the best way to get attention is probably to disrupt some of the major events in the country. And they had actually had a protest during Tour de France already in July in Rotterdam. They've never really been the popular boys in any country, I think, the police. But the football one wasn't well received at all. And it looked like all the 9 games wouldn't go through because they just refused to go and work in those weekends. In the end, 4 games actually went through without any police staff. I think it's a real positive, and it shows that not all football fans are as uncivilized as portrayed.
Absolutely agree, Mikhail. Thanks for coming on Football in Europe. A real insight into the new Eredivisie season, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
Okay, before we go, a quick look at some of the other talking points in Europe this week. We'll start with Robin van Persie. 2 goals in 2 games for Fenerbahce, and he was set up by Nani at the weekend, a former Manchester United double there, as they played out a 1-1 draw with Rizespor. Chris, we heard about the massively controversial move that head coach Jorge Jesus made last week from Andy Brassel from Benfica to Sporting. What happened in Portugal this weekend?
Yeah, well, neither of those teams won, and neither of those nor Porto lead the table, which is the first time that's happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
In many a week or year in Portugal, Arouca lead the table 2-2 after an outstanding famous win over Benfica at the weekend. Sporting drop points at home to Passos, and Porto are held at Maritimo.
And in Russia, CSKA Moscow, with Leonid Slutsky now operating as head coach of the club and the national team. He just announced his first national team squad for the upcoming qualifiers. Well, it hasn't affected them. 6 wins from 6 to start the season.
Yeah, not bad. And of course, last season, Zenit set a new record with 8 wins from 8 to start a campaign. So CSKA going for that in the Russian Premier League.
We have a quick Champions League playoff round special coming out this week on Audio Boom. And the show's now on iTunes as well. Chris, we're at the end of episode 2. Let's have a... You weren't very enthusiastic at the end of the last one.
That is unfair.
You said you were tired.
No, oh, no, tired was the wrong words. I've thoroughly enjoyed the show again.
So polite.
It's just deadpan, isn't it?
It is a bit. Join us next time every Monday. The new show, now on iTunes 2, Football in Europe.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.